Sunday. This is Swan.
And this is Nason.
And you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. And today we have a very wonderful person. I'm so excited and so grateful. Marilyn Rondon?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm so glad you were able to visit New York and are willing to spend your Sunday afternoon in Bushwick, Brooklyn with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Talking about...
Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Your new book. You wrote a children's book, and as I understand it, this came out of a conversation you had with a friend. You guys were talking about the ways that your illustration had been growing and developing. You had started an Instagram account, actually publishing your work into the world, like putting it out there.
Yep.
And then he said, you should write a children's book, and you're like, I just thought about doing that. And then you guys Googled the name, and nothing came up, so the name came from a Google search. Is all this accurate?
Yeah. Basically, whenever I think of anything, I feel like that's kind of how the world is, or at least my generation's kind of like, oh, I should just Google that. So you Google everything. And I was like, what? Like, this is an original idea. I have to do this.
Yeah.
Because I Googled it and I was like, nobody's written a book about tattoos yet. Like, I thought of that.
I mean, lots of books, but the dynamic of a children's book, you did all the art, you wrote it, and Lit Riot Press published it. So I would love to hear about the concept came from that conversation, and then what happened after that led to it becoming a thing.
I used to work at a tattoo shop, so I was around Tattoo Flash all the time, and tons of people that have a lot of tattoos. I myself have a pretty big collection. And while I worked at the shop, I was trying to become an apprentice because I thought I wanted to be a tattoo artist, and I never did that. So I had, like, all of this reference material of different Tattoo Flash from, like, the 20s, 30s, like, just for a really long time. And I thought, how can I make this into a story?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, what do kids like to hear? And they like to hear, like, things that kind of make their imagination go further than just, like, a sentence. So I started to think of ways to make, like, each tattoo like a little adventure and like tell mm-hmm. a story. Yeah, it's really hard writing a book.
Yeah, I can imagine. And just I think all the details that you have to think about that you never would have thought you had to think about.
Yeah.
I haven't done it yet. I'm still trying to decide what I'm actually writing other than just this compulsion I have to write.
I feel you.
Yeah. So I love starting my shows with a free write, actually. So this is a practice called river writing. And so what is going to happen, I'm going to read a poem.
Uh-huh.
And it's a little bit longer, so I'm just going to read it once. You're going to find the line or an idea that's standing out to you. By the way, we have a couple other people in the studio, just in case you hear other voices. I have Ben Taylor of Lit Riot Press, who's taking pictures, and Laura. And she's a friend, and we're happy to have them, too. Anyway, so I'm going to read a poem. It's Relax by L.M. Bass. And then find the line that stands out to you and use that as a starting place for a timed free write. At the end of the free write, you have the invitation to share what you wrote. But if it's personal, you have the ability to say no. And then all I'm going to say is thank you. So this practice is river writing, pen to the page, just like a flow exercise. And it's really kind of fun sometimes to see what comes up. Were we all willing and able?
I'll try.
We have pens and papers. Okay, so this is the poem, Relax, by L.M. Bass. Bad things are going to happen. Your tomatoes will grow a fungus, and your cat will get run over. Someone will leave the bag with the ice cream melting in the car and throw your blue cashmere sweater in the dryer. Your husband will sleep with a girl your daughter's age, her breasts spilling out of her blouse. Or your wife will remember that she's a lesbian and leave you for the woman next door. The other cat, the one that you never really liked, will contract a disease that requires you to pry open its feverish mouth every 4 hours. Your parents will die. No matter how many vitamins you take, how much Pilates, you'll lose your keys, your hair, your memory. If your daughter doesn't plug her heart into every live socket she passes, you'll come home to find your son has emptied the refrigerator, dragged it to the curb, and called the used appliance store for pickup drug money. There's a Buddhist story of a woman chased by a tiger. When she comes to a cliff, she sees a sturdy vine and climbs halfway down. But there's also a tiger below. And two mice, one white, one black, scurry out and begin to gnaw at the vine. At this point, she notices a wild strawberry growing from a crevice. She looks up, down, at the mice. Then she eats the strawberry. So here's the view. The breeze, the pulse in your throat. Your wallet will be stolen. You'll get fat, slip on the bathroom tiles of a foreign hotel, and crack your hip. You'll be lonely. Oh, taste how sweet and tart the red juice is. How the tiny seeds crunch between your teeth. So again, if you just tuned in, quick free write, finding a line that stood out to you. If you get stuck, you can write against the prompt. About a minute left, finding the winding down. finishing that last sentence, that last line. How'd it go? I know, we're talking about life before the show started, and life, jeez,
yeah,
it can be a lot. Do you have any interest in reading what you wrote?
I didn't really write too much.
That's okay. I mean, you're welcome to share or not share. It's just an invitation.
I just wrote the first line that says, bad things are going to happen. And then I wrote, but you got to focus on the good.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because that's just how I basically try to think.
Yeah. And it seems, I mean, thank you for sharing. And yeah. It seems from the outside looking in, that's how you consistently reorient your life. Mm-hmm. So props for that. Nisa, any interest in sharing?
I feel like mine just was like a talk back at the author. So, I mean, I could. I don't know.
It's up to you.
I think I'll just summarize it. And then basically, yeah. I'm just like, wow, your life kind of sucks. Maybe you should do some shit to make that better. Like, your husband cheated on you with someone your daughter's age, and your daughter keeps sticking things in electronic sockets? Like, let's maybe fix some things.
We can look at the parameters that are building these situations.
Yeah, don't just be like, well, that's life. Like, no.
I like it. I like that take. Mine's short, so I'll read it fast. Oh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
By the way. Okay. A tiger above and a tiger below. Seems like we are always dancing between disaster and coming in and out of chaos. You catch your breath but realize it's only the calm before another storm. So you resent, resist, accept, struggle, hope, laugh, weep. It is the weeping that helps the most sometimes. Open the floodgates and letting go of control. Isn't control an illusion after all? Isn't reality an illusion after all? Is breath and body an illusion after all? Which means it can be shaped, influenced, perhaps open to suggestions, or at least sitting down and sharing a cup of tea and talking about it. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's really good. Cool. Thanks for being open. I love this opportunity for spontaneous creation, or just spontaneous of like, where did your mind go with a prompt? So, yeah. So I want to talk about. Well, this is my great frustration, is that I could probably talk to you for about 5 hours, and our show is not that long, but I feel like. Your book has become a platform for encouraging kids to think about acceptance, but it also has become kind of a voice for you and being able to say, like, these are some of the things that have impacted my life and who I am. And I'm referring to things like addiction and coming out of that and finding exercise and positivity. Do you want to speak to that?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like everyone that reads my book kind of interprets it in a different way, and I like hearing what different people take from it. Yeah, I mean, the children's book on its own is more about, like, we live in a very judgmental world, and it's just kind of like teaching kids that, like, I don't know, kids look at me all different kinds of ways. Sometimes mm-hmm. they'll, like, be, like, super interested in me and, like, jump at me and ask me a million questions, and a lot of times they'll be, like, scared and, like, run away, and I just want to kind of explain to them that tattoos aren't really anything other than art, but
yeah.
It's also more than just that, and, like, the same thing with the drawings in the book. It's not just, like, one specific girl with, like, a certain skin type. It's, like, there's different girls that are asking the questions and, like,
yeah.
different characters in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
yeah.
kind of explaining diversity in a way.
Yeah, which is something that I loved. And I read in an interview that you were reading it with one of your friends who was a child, and they pointed to the rose and pointed to you.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that was a moment of validation of, like, yeah, this is a person that you love, and the tattoos are a part of them.
Yeah.
And
she was like, she really thought it was, she's like, oh, it's you. Like, pointing at it, like, oh, whoa, that's you.
Yeah.
Another crazy thing that she did, I painted this mural in Miami, like, a year ago, and her mom drove past it, and she saw it out the window, and she was pointing at it and, like, kept saying my name. So I thought that was, like, insane. Like, the way that a kid's mind, you know, how much...
They associate.
I feel like art,
yeah.
It really, like, sticks to their brain.
Yeah, and how much they see that we maybe don't give them credit for. That's the magic. One of my best friends, I moved from Utah a year ago, but one of my best friends in Utah was a 3 or 4 year old. And I just loved, because all of a sudden he'd be like, do you want to go play with the fairies? Or, like, something that, you know, it seems absurd, but then I'm also like, I was there once too.
Yeah.
And I can choose to step back into this space where anything is possible.
Yeah. I mean, I the last time I saw her was like a couple weeks ago, and she was like, whoa, your hair's so long. And so she calls me. She doesn't know how to say my name, so she calls me whoa. And I was like, yeah, it's because I'm a mermaid. And she's like, oh, you're a mermaid? And I was like, yeah, I live at the beach. And she's like, I had never seen your fin. And I was like, oh, because you've never gone into the ocean with me. It only comes out when I'm in the ocean. And she, like, believed me. And then I'm like, oh, I'm lying to a child. But at the same time, it's like, I'm not lying to her. I'm, like, playing with her. There's, like, no way she'll remember next time she sees me. Like, yeah, you're a mermaid.
Not always true.
Yeah. No, I think that. You're now a mermaid.
Yeah. You're now a mermaid. And you've just changed the parameters of mermaid. Yeah.
I don't know. I think she'll forget.
Maybe, maybe not. Maybe she'll hold to it and be like, I'm going to be a mermaid when I grow up.
Just like, whoa.
And the book is dedicated to anyone that has ever been called a freak, strange, weird, and everyone that has felt outcast by society's idea of beauty. Stay weird. And I love that as a platform for this book. And it opens up this conversation of why did this person do this? And I mean, the reason can be because I'm a mermaid, you know, it can be because, you know, this impactful thing happened and I wanted to, you know, make a memory on my body of it, or it's art. It's something I feel makes me beautiful. For me, the times I've gotten tattoos have felt like some sort of a release, but not necessarily, I don't know, like it's not a big deal too. Sometimes be like this big thing happened, but it might also be, I just wanted a rose or
I feel like for me personally, tattoos are kind of like a timeline.
Yeah.
Of my life, you know, everything is super disposable in the world, you know, and they're like a way for me to like hang on to like memories or people or things that happen. And I'll know in like 20 years, like, oh, where'd you get that one? Like, oh, my friend did that one because of this or because of that. Yeah. And like, you can't really do that with many things in your life because you can lose your entire apartment in a fire. You can like, you know, crash your car and all your stuff be in it, and all your phone or whatever, someone steals your computer and like, everything's gone.
Yeah. Your body is your body.
Yeah.
And for me, a lot of times they're associated with relationships, which is for me, my life. Like, what would I be without the people who are in my life influencing me?
Yeah. I mean, I feel a lot of mine are done. I mean, most of my tattoos are done by my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a way of me having their art, not just like in my house, but like on me.
Yeah. So, yeah. Walking canvas.
Yeah, I get that every day. Oh, you're like a walking canvas. I'm
yeah.
Like, very well, original.
Yeah.
Just be like, damn right, bitches, pay money to see this.
I loved reading all the stories that came out. There's a lot of interviews online, and I'll put links to all those. But you talk about your first tattoo, which I love. Do you want to talk a little bit more about it?
Do you see it? It's this one right here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, innocence is bliss.
Yeah, it looks like a club stamp.
It totally does.
I wanted my sleeve to cover it, and then the way that he drew it,
it still doesn't
cover it, and I'm kind of like okay with that at this point. But yeah, I got that because I don't necessarily think ignorance is bliss, but when you're like when you lose your innocence, it's kind of like a bummer.
Yeah.
It's a way to like keep your innocence in a lot of things.
So. Well, I think your writing kind of connects back to that of like you. I feel like people hit moments in life multiple times where they're like jaded or disenchanted or just like, oh,
uninspired.
But then you have to rekindle the flame and like do the things that bring you back to life. And then you're like, oh, wait, I can choose in a lot of ways to hold that innocence much as I can.
Yeah.
And you don't regret any of your tattoos?
No.
Have you changed any of them?
I did. When I was maybe 20, I bought a tattoo kit. That's before I got a job at a tattoo shop. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a tattoo artist. This is going to be sick. And I did this big squid on my thigh. And it just was super light and like really badly done. So I got a cover up on top of it. But I never finished that either. So
you're not only a walking canvas, but in progress.
And I don't really ever, like, I guess that's the other, most of my tattoos I've gotten impulsively, but I feel like I made the right choice with them.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, I think about myself, like, when I was a kid or, like, a teenager, and I would have never in my wildest dreams, like, imagined that this is what I would look like, like, today, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. They just kind of...
They're part of you.
Yeah.
I could talk about tattoos all day. And let's bring it back to books and words. But I do want to talk about something. I feel like sometimes when you're talking to someone who's writing something or someone who's creating something or painting something or building something, for them, it's never done. It's just when they stop working about on it or stop changing it.
Yeah.
It's kind of your body. It's just going to keep changing and adding and whatever until it's done. Yeah. And then you stop working on it.
I get like all the really old people or like super conservative people being like, you got any room left or are you done? And I'm like, yeah. No. Yeah.
I've got lots of room.
I'm like, yeah, look at my arm. Like, there's so much room. And they just kind of like nod their heads.
But there is the stigma that goes with the generations. And this, I think, is voicing the fact that, you know, a lot of times over time, things become more accepted.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think so.
Or the words that you chose to get on your body. I'm curious about that since it's a show about words.
For sure.
Yeah.
I got thoughts become things on my forehead because I tend to be very, like, in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that to, like, remind myself to not be super negative and not be judgmental and not be, like, anything that I don't like about myself. So, like, to really focus on my thoughts. And a lot of people think it's crazy that I would get that tattooed on my head as a reminder, but it's just me. You know, there's nothing I can say other than like, yeah, well, you're not me, so
yeah.
That's why you didn't do it. I have no hate, no fear on my eyelids. Same thing, like, I don't like to use those two words. Hate is a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I really don't like something, like the second I say I hate that. Like, no, you don't. Don't hate that. Stop.
It speaks to, like, the things that you resist persist.
Yeah.
And I, when I read in an interview you saying no hate, no fear, I fell in love with it. And also made me remember in high school, I was adopted and my guardian was like, we don't say hate. And I was adopted when I was 17. So I was adopted at this age where, like, I was already doing my things, and
yeah.
She was like, we don't do that. We don't do that. And so I was like, oh, I hate this. And she's like, you don't hate it. You dislike it to an extremity.
Yeah. So I kind of, like, do the same thing with myself and the same thing with fear. Like, I feel like I've lived so much of my life around this idea of fear. I mean, the fact that I grew up here as a first-generation immigrant, so up until I was 27, I had zero papers, zero way of being anything. Yeah, I came here when I was 5. And I always had this constant fear of, like, getting deported and being taken away from, like, the place that I know. And
That's strong.
Once I, like, got my papers, I was like, I can't ever live off of that fear anymore because it doesn't exist. And, like, I don't want to be afraid of anything. And anything that I'm afraid of, I should just go for. And, like,
step into
myself.
It. I like the concept of stepping into it.
Yeah. I mean, being comfortable where you're uncomfortable is kind of like a thing that everyone should do, you know, like, make yourself uncomfortable and then try to be comfortable in that discomfort.
Yeah.
And then you'll know that you can get past it.
And when I was in a time of transition, I would try and consciously each day do something I've never done before and something that I was scared of. I did it pretty consistently for a couple of months, and I feel like that really just expanded my world in a way that nothing else could have. And it helped me discover myself anew because it's really easy to start losing yourself, and especially in this day and age. You can just always plug into something else. And so really finding your own core. And that's the issue of immigration is another thing that has been voiced in the articles that have come about because of your book. And so it's all connected to who you are as a person. And that's really cool.
It's still really hard to talk about that stuff because it's, like, so tricky. And, like, it's something I'm really passionate about and something that's still, like, a lot of people, if they've never gone through it or don't have a loved one that has had to deal with immigration situations. Like, when I was in high school, I would get into debates with, like, people that just, they had no clue. And I would want to beat the shit out of them. Like, shut the fuck up. You're so privileged. Like, you have no idea how hard life is.
Yeah.
You know, like, both of my parents, illegal. I was illegal till I was 27. Like, it's hard. living under the table, not being able to get a cell phone, not being able to do anything, like literally.
Yeah, you're so damned.
Yeah.
And some, I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I managed to do it and I'm lucky.
Yeah. And thank you for being strong and proactive with that. That is a big thing, and especially, I don't know, political arenas, which I don't like to get into, but just you're a person.
Yeah.
You're not this evil entity that's trying to undermine anything. Like, you're a person.
I came here when I was 5. Like, I didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Nisa, you had something that you were curious to talk. Do you want to?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of hit on it throughout. It was, I brought it up to you, but it's something that I'm personally very passionate about. So having a young mom, I have this very strong memory of a time that she had come to my brother and I asking to get like a nose piercing and how we would feel about it. And my brother just kind of threw a fit about it. And so she didn't for about 10 years. She didn't get her nose piercing. She didn't get any tattoos, even though these were things that she really wanted. When I had seen your book and when I was told about this, I got really excited because I just thought there's this whole generation of women who now are entering the world who do have these kind of things, who aren't the stereotypical like housewife. Mm-hmm. And a book like this really kind of opens up the world for them, I guess, in a cultural way. That makes sense.
Yeah. We actually sent a book out to one of my friends and she saw it. She has a boy. Mm-hmm. And she's a single mom. And she was like, this book is so awesome because it teaches especially boys that their moms can be tough and macho and strong and not just like men aren't the only ones that have those things. And I was like, sick, that's awesome. Like, that's what you took from my book.
Yeah. So that's exactly. Amazing. Empower women. Yeah. Which I feel like you're totally doing.
I didn't even purposely do it.
Yeah. Like, there are a lot of books out there for the new world, I guess, that are coming out that are like, you know, my parents are divorced or like I have to, you know, so and so has two moms. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wonderful. And I'm just really excited that now there's a book out there that's like, my mom's a badass.
Yeah. But you do boxing too, yeah?
Yeah. I had my very first amateur fight this year.
Ooh.
I lost though.
You gotta lose sometimes.
Yeah.
No fear.
Yeah, exactly. I actually have never been in a fight in my entire life, and the first time I fought someone was in front of over 300 people for charity, and it was the scariest thing ever. But I lost on points. Not, I didn't get knocked out, which was my biggest fear. It was like getting my nose broken. Uh-huh. I was like, man, I can't believe I'm doing this. My opponent was 15 pounds heavier than me and had 3 years boxing experience on me. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't necessarily a fair fight, but I gave it my all and I didn't get knocked out.
Congratulations. I would be in so much trouble.
Dude, it was the scariest thing ever.
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
Was it like, I feel like it's kind of like one of those things that you walk into it and you're like, what am I doing? This is the worst. And then once it's over, you get like this rush of endorphins. And
no,
you're just
when it was over, I cried for like 3 hours.
Really?
I literally felt like I was in a car accident.
Wow.
Yeah.
She got
the adrenaline kicked in afterwards. And then that night when I was sleeping,
you were like, no.
I was just, no, I would replay the fight in my head or in my dreams. And out, like when you're fighting, you're supposed to like pivot your feet and like do like certain movements. And I was in my bed sleeping and like pivoting my feet and like, like blocking my face in my sleep because I kept being like back in the ring. And I was like, what the fuck? Like being human, so crazy. Like our brains are still, even though I wasn't awake and I wasn't in the ring, like my body knew how to like.
It was
react.
Processing.
Wow. Yeah, it was crazy. So now I know.
So are you gonna fight again?
Well, I injured my hip and I injured my wrist.
Yeah.
So I've taken a break from it. I'm like not in the shape that I'd like to be right now because I've had to take a break from it.
Yeah.
But it's okay because like as we get older, we have to really listen to our bodies. And
which is brings me to yoga. So it seems like exercise, boxing, yoga became kind of a way for you to ground yourself and process
life.
Yes. Sure. How did those things come into your life?
The yoga thing, one of my friends from middle school was opening up a yoga studio in Miami and she wanted me to paint a mural for her, but she couldn't really pay me, so she was like, I'll trade you a year of yoga classes for a mural. And I was like, when in my life am I ever going to be able to afford a year of like Bikram yoga? I was like, sure, I'll do it. And it was the best thing I could have ever done. I did 2 60-day challenges where you consecutively do yoga every single day for 60 days.
I've never done that.
It's so worth it. I mean, it's hard. It just teaches you, like, discipline and...
And listen to your body.
Yeah, not just that. Like to have integrity with yourself. Like, I'm going to do this today. I'm going to do this every day for 60 days. And it just changes you, like, completely. Like, it changes the way you think. It changes the way you treat people. It changes the way you eat. It changes the way that you view your own body. You become so much more accepting of yourself, and you learn how to actually, like, work with your body. And I don't know. I feel like I'm overly aware of, like, everything. Like, I know when I, like, where I have certain pains and how, I don't know, just human body is amazing. And when you do yoga like that, and not just that, like, it's super connected with your mind, so
yeah,
it just makes you, like, realize how amazing it is to be human.
And what I try and teach people is presence, and your body's mm-hmm. a tool that you can always tap into and feel, and it pulls mm-hmm. you into this moment rather than projecting forward or backward, which in my mind, those are the tigers, right?
Yeah.
That we're constantly like, oh shit, oh shit, whoa shit, whoa. And like, if you're present, those tigers aren't there. You're just here with the strawberry and the mice. Like,
yeah. I mean, last year I also did a Vipassana, which is a 10-day silent meditation retreat mm-hmm. where you don't read, you don't write, you don't speak to anyone, not even yourself, out loud, no exercise, nothing. You eat 2 meals a day and you meditate for 10 hours a day for 10 days straight.
That's insane.
It was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, that sounds impossible. Yeah.
No, it was sick. And it completely, like, made me even more aware of, like, what it is to be human. Like, how often do people think about the sensation they feel of their breath going in and out of their nose?
Yeah, you can feel it.
Yeah, I had to do that for 3 days straight, just focus on what, yeah, how I feel it, if it's hot, if it's cold, am I feeling a hair moving on my arm, like, if my foot falls asleep, don't move it. Yeah, like, practice restraint, and just, it was pretty sick.
You've got me, like, hyper aware of my body right now. It's yeah. like, how am I breathing?
You have everything. To be. You have to be, because, you know, it's a whole, like, that's life. Your yeah. body is, you know, your...
Yeah, your temple.
Your universe, in a way.
Well, and speaking to your book, like, it's your body, it's like the one thing you own that really is, like, it's temporary, but it's also, like, yours, and yeah. you can carry it with you wherever you go, and you sure. can trust it. For me, that was a big thing, is, like, being able to trust myself to take care of myself
yeah.
in all the ways.
Yeah. I've been offended before because someone is like, yeah, I don't understand why people get tattoos. You're just objectifying your body. And I'm like,
but we all...
that's, like, really ignorant to say that, and, like, it's not objectifying my body. I'm just adding to it. Like,
well,
people dye their hair. People get piercings. People mm-hmm. get plastic surgery. People do whatever the hell they... You get haircuts. Like, what's yeah. the difference, you know? In a way, it's just, I guess it's a little more extreme. I don't know.
And in one of the articles, you talk about how your friend almost lost her job as an artist, as a tattoo artist, for tattooing your face. And you had to go emphasize, like, you did want this. You were okay with it. The gender thing here comes into play, that if it was a man, it would not have been nearly as...
Well, she had already extreme. Been tattooing her boyfriend at the same shop. Mm-hmm. She tattooed his face probably, like, 3 or 4 times before she tattooed my face, and no one said anything about her tattooing him. And then she tattooed you. My face, and everyone had something to say about it. And it's just kind of like... I had my neck tattooed already. I had a bunch of... I have a gigantic back piece. I have a whole sleeve. Like, it doesn't even if you don't have that many tattoos, like, if someone it's wants to get something face. Tattooed on their face, yeah.
Like, it, I think understanding the permanence of it when you're going into there, being like, this will be on your face,
yeah.
and everyone will see it, and you need to understand that you can never do certain things in your life if you do this, but if you understand the repercussions, it's still your ability to say yes or no.
Yeah.
When I got my first tattoo, it was in Utah, where the stigma is a little higher, and she talked about how, like, in her, like, no one in her studio was allowed to do the face. It's
That's
just, like,
crazy.
It is really interesting in the tattoo culture, what's mm-hmm. taboo and what's not, even still.
Yeah.
And then another thing I wanted to mention, just because it came up in a few articles, is just the assumptions people make about you as a person, just by looking at you, not even talking to you. You've been approached as a strip, like people assuming you're a stripper, drug dealer.
So.
Yeah.
For the most part, people also are just like super intimidated by me, I guess, or like after I'll get to know someone, they'll be like, man, I thought you were like such a bitch for so long just because of how you look. And I'm like, what? That's crazy. Uh-huh. Like, I'm probably the nicest person you'll ever meet. Like, that's weird that people are like, when I have to like think about it, because I don't even see myself like that, you know? So I'm like, what? People are intimidated by me. Why? I'm like super nice. You know? But it's just like an outer shell type thing.
Yeah, they don't know. They don't talk to you. I came up to be aware of you through Ben, who helped you publish your book, and I saw you, and I was just instantly like, this person is awesome, and I love everything that they're promoting and talking about and doing.
Thank you.
But also it made me curious, like, if I were to just pass you on the street, not having come into you through an avenue, I don't know, it just begs the question for me to evaluate, like, how am I watching people walking by? How am I interacting with this world, and what assumptions am I making?
Which brings it back to the book, just go, because it opens up the possibility for people to become more comfortable with that. And I also read one of the interviews where you were talking about how the girl who calls you woo-woo, how for her, tattoos are a commonplace thing since both her parents have it. And so she probably doesn't have that same perception that we do.
Mm-mm. She doesn't see it as like a foreign thing.
No, it's she just thinks they're drawings or stickers. I mean, she knows her tattoos now, but like when she was smaller, she would like ask me to put stickers on her. She'd be like, whoa, I want to, like, she would be like, look like whoa. And I was like, oh, okay. So I would grab her little arm and just put stickers all over her arm. And then her mom would come in and she'd be like, oh my God, you guys are at it again. Like, she wanted a sleeve.
But see, that's wonderful that she can have that kind of acceptance. And I just wish that other people did. That it wasn't.
I mean, I also understand that like tattoos aren't for everyone.
Yeah.
But still, like, it shouldn't be this thing that's frowned upon.
You're not telling other people to get tattoos. No.
And I'm definitely not trying to tell kids to get tattoos.
And yes, advocating, your response was you wouldn't support anyone getting a tattoo before they're 18 because you just don't.
I mean, I didn't even get my first tattoo till I was 18.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, I don't think it's smart to even, I don't know.
I think you need more experience.
Yeah. Just like live a little, or like really think, like if you want to get tattooed when you're 18, think about it from like 16 till 18. If that's what you still want, like get it when you turn 18.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
And I like how you
talk. Time changes everything.
I like how you say a lot of your tattoos were impulsive, but you don't regret any of them. Mm-mm. But I think you have the foresight to understand that about yourself.
Yeah.
When you're 18, like...
I mean, for a while in my life, I did regret all of my tattoos.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... I feel like that's also what happens with age. From, like, 23 to, like, I was 25, I would just be...
Did you get more work done during this time? Or did you take a, like, couple years break?
I would, like, have, like, my moments, and then I'd be like, no, I should just get more. But,
It seems like that was the response. You're like, well, it's done and it's permanent, so I'll just add to it.
So I went through, like, this moment, like, maybe it was, like, a year of my life where I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did this. I have all these tattoos now. I'm never going to be normal. No one's ever going to see me as normal, blah, blah, blah. Like, just these stupid thoughts. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to get super covered up.
Yeah.
And, like, if no one likes it, fuck them.
Nice. I like that.
Thanks.
So talking about your process, you as a person have integrated a lot of different things in your life, and it seems like that's been reflected a little bit in the book, but it is a children's book, so there's like a conciseness and a shortness to the book. Tell me about the process, like when you were writing and doing the images.
Well, I would I'm like an organized, messy person. I would like write the whole book and I'd be like, all right, so today I'm going to work on this page. And then I would lose the page of like what the whole book was like. And I was like, fuck, what was the one I was going to do? So then I would be like, all right, a spider. So I have to make a story about spiders. And be like, oh, a cupcake. I have to make a story about cupcakes. Mm-hmm. And then so I had all of these pages. And then I was like, how do I make this flow as a story? So, like, making the whole story from beginning to end was harder. Like, I would just do work on, like, full layouts, and then I was like, but how do I make this a story? And then in the end, it just kind of like, I was like, oh, I should just repeat, like, but why? Because that's what kids do.
Yeah.
Just ask, why? You know? So it's like, I just should just be a child asking the questions and then answer it.
Love it. And had you written a lot before you wrote the...
Not really. I mean, well, I started writing a book while I was also doing this book about getting out of an abusive relationship and quitting drinking and just all these terrible things that were happening.
The adult version of the book.
Yeah, my life. I was just, like, writing this, like, well, more so trying to get over my ex. I started writing a book about the relationship.
You don't have to, but will you please finish that book at some point?
Yeah, I want to. It was just, like, I had just gone out of this relationship, and I was so – I had never felt so horrible in my life. Mm-hmm. I was, like, I just need to write everything that happened in order to make sense of it. And the story, I dated a psychopath. So I needed to understand what happened to me, and the only way I could understand it was through writing and then reading books about psychopaths, and I was like, oh my God, I actually dated a psycho. Like, I'm not the crazy one.
Do you know Amanda Palmer?
No.
She's a musician, and she has a song called Ampersand, and that's kind of my logo, but it's about a relationship and about marriage and how she's not going to be one side of an ampersand for her life, but she... One of the taglines is, like, I'm not the one that's crazy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're with crazy people and, like, I don't know.
They make you crazy.
Oh, yeah. And you're like, I am insane. What is wrong with me? And
the craziest parts of me came out in that relationship.
And you are. You are a crazy person because of who you're, like, joining with.
I have a very strong theory that women aren't crazy. Men make them that way.
I don't even think it's, like, a gender thing. No, I just feel like certain people, like, come into your life. Like, I attract... sociopaths and psychopaths, and I can't help it. They're fascinating people.
Or
they're
like
really charming
narcissists. And this is something I've been talking to my friend, like, why do I always go for the assholes? And he's like, because they're confident and you like that. And but then they're not, like, compassionate or like they don't understand empathy. And you're like, damn, that makes sense.
Yeah,
sucks, but it makes sense.
Yeah. So, like, getting out of that, like, I started writing a book just to, like, understand what the hell happened to me. And, like, I was like, I've had my heart broken before, but why do I feel like this terrible?
Yeah.
So I started to write a book while also doing the children's book. They're, like, two totally different things. Like, one book is about, like, the darkest years of my life, and then the other one's about, like, making kids accept their parents.
And when did you meet Ben? When did you connect with Lit Riot?
Ben is actually working on a few books with a friend of mine, Vanessa, who makes crystal dildos. She's super awesome.
Yeah.
And I showed her my book, and she was like, you need to meet my publisher. He's going to love this. And she linked us, and he was like, what? This is awesome. And I was like, sick. You like it? And he was like, yes, it's great. And I was like, sweet. Let's make it happen.
Nice. Yeah. And another thing in the interview, I really appreciated your honesty here. You talk about how people perceive you through your Instagram feed, and they have this perception of you, but they would never perhaps know of, like, the anxiety and the dysfunctional relationships that shaped you and the experiences that made you who you are. And I really, as a point, I think especially in this digital age where so much is created online and so many assumptions are made, and the immigration thing, like, people are just like, oh, you're just this person, and you're like, nah, bro. like
I've had it hard, you have no idea. I'm not just some chick with tattoos, like,
and so thank you for voicing that in addition to all the other things that are, I think, arising as a result of this. I like to end my shows with a rapid fire. Before I do that, is there anything you want to plug? There was a book launch last weekend, but are you doing any events, or is anything interesting happening in the near future?
Everything that's happening in the near future, I can't even talk about.
Oh.
Ooh, yeah, so it's like,
so
yeah.
Follow secrets. Instagram to be in on the loop. And
at Kali and Tichita. It's a joke. I can explain the whole story behind my Instagram name.
Yeah.
I feel like I should do that.
Please.
So... 2 years ago, I moved back to Miami, and I was getting over that ex, and I was writing a lot and painting a lot and doing a bunch of art, and I was with my friend in her car. We were going to paint a mural that I was working on, and I was like, dude, I just want a thug. Like, I just want a thug to, like, take care of me and, like, make a baby with. And right after I said that, I was like, I should put an ad out on Craigslist. And she was like, do it. And I was like, yeah, I'll make it a zine. And she was like, do it, do it, do it. So I did. And one of the guys that responded was like, LOL, you funny as fuck. Why you gotta be that caliente chica? And I was like, that's the funniest thing anyone's ever asked me in my life. Why do I have to be that caliente chica? So I made that my Instagram name.
That's great.
It's like totally a joke. It's not even like a real thing.
Yeah, it's great though, and it's catching.
It's just, it means hot chick.
Yeah.
Which
you are.
Be a hot chick?
But why?
I don't know why I gotta be that. I really don't know.
I'm teasing.
The elements of sorry, I'm Hispanic as well.
I think at some point I want to get Why You Gotta Be That.
Yes.
Somewhere.
Why You Gotta Be That?
Why You Gotta Be That? It's like, yeah. I don't know. Why You Gotta Look Like That?
Why You Gotta Be That? That's great. So rapid fire, some quick questions about books. Is there a book that you've been wanting to read for a long time that you just haven't gotten around to reading?
I have this book in my house that I bought. I still haven't finished reading it. I still haven't even started. It's called The Story of the Human Body. I can't remember who wrote it, but it's just an entire book
visual?
About the... No.
No visuals.
It's just written, yeah.
Curious.
Mm. Yeah. Right. I still haven't gotten around to it because it's really dense.
Mm.
And I like...
Is it big?
It's like this thick, but just the way that it's written is just like, oh,
you have to be there with
it. I can't
even pronounce that. It's not like a beach read that you're just like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I like to read a lot of like books about like, I don't know, being a witch.
Ooh,
stuff like that.
I'm into that.
Yeah. Psychic self-defense type of stuff.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
It's good to know. Mm. Handy.
Why not?
That sounds fascinating. I didn't realize there was multiple books out. I'm not surprised there's books about everything.
For real. There are.
Is there a book you recall your parents reading to you?
No, but my mom, okay, this is another thing that I would love to do one day, but my mom's just not, she'll like say yes and then she won't do it. When I was a kid, she would make up these stories before bedtime called La Hormiguita Viajera, which means the traveling ant. And she would make up stories about where this ant was going and places that the ant went and friends that he made along the way. Mm-hmm. And I would love to make the series of books with her. She would write them and I would illustrate them. But it's like impossible
just,
to get her.
Just grab a tape recorder.
Yeah, and
don't
like
make
hang
her
out
write
with
it.
Her one day. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, she would never like read books. She would just make up stories.
Yeah.
And the same thing with my dad. Like my father.
I think in some ways that might be better.
Yeah. My father was a musician, so he would like come in the room sometimes and just like do like bedtime songs. And that was it.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, such an artistic upbringing.
The same family, my 3-4-year-old friend is, they would have hootenannies. And so all of a sudden people would just grab an instrument and we'd like just start banging away. And sometimes it sounded good and sometimes it sounded horrible. But just especially for kids, like just making noise is such a like vibrant part of your life.
I mean, my siblings, and I have a sister that's 2 years older than me. And then my younger sister is 6.5 years younger than me.
Yeah.
But and then I also have an older sister that's 7 years older than me. So I lived in a house with all these girls and we were really poor. So we would kind of have to like entertain each other. And my dad had instruments because he was a musician, and we would like go into his room and make up songs, and that's what we would do. So, and they were terrible.
I think they have to be terrible. I had a songwriter on, and I was like, "What's your process?" And she's like, "Well, first of all, I hate when people ask me that." And she says, "The first thing I ever do when I'm sitting down to write a song is give myself permission to write the worst song in the history of human race, like just the worst. And as soon as I give myself permission to do that." It gets a lot better from there. It's just like, what a great concept in the world of giving yourself permission to just bomb.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're allowed to just bomb.
I mean, I feel like I do that with my art. Like, I'll just do a bunch of really bad drawings and get frustrated. Then I'll be like, oh, I suck. I never want to make art again. And then the next day I'll be like, stop feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah.
And then, like, make something that I really love. And then I'm like, oh, cool. I just have to, like, make really bad drawings in order to, like, a good one.
You know? It's a thing that you never remember is failure is an important part of art.
or
anything.
I mean, it's a...
Yeah.
It's,
and
I
have, life.
People have been, like, over-inflating that word lately, like, fail big, blah, blah, blah. But I don't see it as failure. I see it as learning. And,
lessons,
and that's
for sure.
Absolutely part of the process. You have, for lack of a better word, sometimes you really have to fuck things up before you're like, oh, I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like, it makes light bulbs go off.
For sure.
So I find that sometimes people have a book they read when they were a teenager that kind of transitioned them. like you were a kid and then you read this book, made you feel things or think about things differently. Was there a book that did that for you?
As corny as it sounds, when I was a teenager, I really loved Percy Being a Wallflower.
Yeah.
I loved that book. And then same, Catcher in the Rye. Mm. I love that book too.
Those are both really good ones. Mm-hmm. Thanks. So how do you find the books you read now about witchcraft and just books in general?
Sort of like Google stuff. Or I'll be reading a book and they'll talk about another book. Mm. And then I'll go on Google and I'll immediately like buy it on Amazon.
Yeah, that's
my... And then
my,
it'll come in the mail and I'm like, hey, I got that book.
That's my never-ending... like to read list. I'm like, oh, this book is awesome, and they reference this book, and like yeah. just grows exponentially.
Totally. Or I'll just like walk into Strand and see what interests me, and I'll pick it out and be like, sick, that was a really good book.
If I were to walk into your house right now, what books would I find there? What would be showcased?
I have a book on astral projection that sits like next to my bed. That's totally like, I feel like it's nonsense, but it's still kind of cool. I like mystical books. Just books about, like, spirituality and like, past lives and stuff like that. And then, like, a bunch of psychology books.
Nice.
I'm, like, really into understanding the human experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then in terms of writing, do you have any rituals or, like, things that you do with your writing that have helped you?
With the one book that I'm writing now, there are certain songs that I'll have to listen to.
Oh.
And it'll, like, bring up memories.
They're, like, just personal songs. They would be meaningless to the world.
It's a lot of Drake songs.
Ah.
I'll listen to Drake, and then I'm like, oh, this reminds me of this. And then I'll start writing about it.
Nice.
Or I'll look through, like, old text messages or, like, photos also, like, spark a lot of memories.
Very autobiographical.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm doing, so it makes sense. But if I were to, like,
reasonable.
Be writing a fiction, I don't know. It would be totally
Yeah, that's
different.
So funny, because I, in my head, I want to write fiction, because I feel like in some ways it gives me permission to do things that if I'm being autobiographical, I don't necessarily want to, like, say this thing or out this person or, like, you
Well,
know.
You just change the names of the characters.
Right.
That's what I'm doing.
But if it's fiction, then I can just be like, I made it up, even if I didn't.
Yeah.
But then, like, how do I consistently, like, I don't know, it's like finding truth, finding... I don't know. I'm still figuring out
my
process,
book, I'm
obviously.
Like, what are the chances that the characters in this book are going to read this book? And I'm like, they're not going to read it.
Well, that I guess that's one perspective is just they're never going to see it. So
yeah.
I can write whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably
for the most part, everyone's so wrapped up in their own lives. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, like they're not going to read it.
Yeah, that's true.
that's how I feel.
Have you been given writing advice that was influential? Like anyone that like saw your writing and said something?
Not really, because I don't share it that much.
Yeah.
It's still very personal. Like I didn't go to college. My writing, I write the way that I speak, so it's not very good.
I like the way you speak.
Oh, thanks.
And one last question for you. Do you have any like podcast or like video streaming addictions that are things that you love?
I really love memes.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to memes. I could literally sit on the Explore page on Instagram and meme for like 2 hours. And Vines. There's this one blog that's called We Love Short Videos. And I just like watch like short videos all day and like, crack up.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've been listening to Ink and Worm. We're on all the socials. Find us Ink and Worm or Swandrishti. And thank you guys so much for being here, everyone. Even though we mostly talk to Marilyn, you guys are all wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And I will leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Diaphanous. Hey, folks,